Care.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 5 o'clock. This is Justine Green. More global powers have been calling on Israel to agree to a ceasefire with Hezbollah. Sir Keir Starmer used his first speech at a UN General Assembly to call for an end to the fighting in Lebanon and warn the conflict threatened to engulf the region and spin out of anyone's control.
This is intimately linked with the situation in Gaza, where again we need to see an immediate ceasefire. It shames us all that the suffering in Gaza continues to grow. The answer is diplomacy. The release of all the hostages and the unfettered flow of aid to those in need.
President Zelensky of Ukraine has outlined his plans for victory against Russia in a meeting with Joe Biden at the White House. Mr. Biden said Russia wouldn't prevail and pledged more military aid. The Ukrainian leader then met the US Vice President Kamala Harris, who insisted it was vital to stand up to Vladimir Putin. The Treasury is reconsidering Labour's manifesto plan to further tighten rules on non-dom tax status, which was scrapped by the last Conservative government. BBC News understands there are concerns about how much money would be raised if wealthy foreigners left the UK. Sir Keir Starmer has attended talks with Donald Trump for the first time in New York. Beforehand, the Prime Minister said the aim was to establish a relationship between the two of them. Our political editor Chris Mason reports.
The Prime Minister told us it was good to have the opportunity for talks with Donald Trump at his New York base, Trump Tower. "I'm a great believer in personal relations on the international stage," Sir Keir Starmer said, adding, "I think it really matters that you know who your counterpart is in any given country and know them personally, get to know them face to face." Earlier at a news conference, Mr. Trump was asked what he made of the Prime Minister. "I actually think he's very nice. He ran a great race. It's very early. He's very popular," he said.
Football. Tottenham Hotspur have begun their Europa League campaign with a 3-0 win at home against the Azerbaijani side Karabag, with the Spurs defender Radu Dragusin sent off. His manager Ange Postecoglou praised his side for sticking to their guns despite the red card.
"When you go down 10 minutes, invariably at times you can't be as aggressive or keep the ball as much or play as fluently, but for the most part I thought the intent was there. That's the kind of team we want to be, and you know, whatever challenge we have before us is to tackle it that way."
Coldplay have been named this century's most played British band. The music licensing company PPL said the group's songs were played the most across the UK via radio, television and in public places such as shops and restaurants. The band's songs were played 40,000 more times than their next biggest competitor, which was Queen. And the weather, the rain will persist in the southeast but should clear by lunchtime. Elsewhere it will be mostly dry but a cool and breezy day. BBC News, it's 3 minutes past five.
Matt Shawley.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel. I was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
Lisa Nadi, Central State of Culture Media as well.
We're toughening up the system to make sure that people who are unfit owners can't become football club owners.
Matt Shawley.
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Wake up to money from BBC 5 Live.
Hello, welcome to Wake Up to Money. Two major credit agencies have slashed Thames Water's credit rating into junk territory. Can it survive? And
I think this will be hopefully a great transition for everyone involved, and opening I will be, you know, stronger for it as we are for all of our transitions.
That is the CEO of OpenAI speaking about the recent resignations, as reports are they're moving to become a for-profit company. Plus, asking the important questions on Wake Up to Money this morning. How much should a children's birthday party cost?
Wake Up to Money with Felicity Hanna.
Very good morning to you. Welcome to Wake Up to Money. It is Friday, the 27th of September. It's 4 minutes past five. There's loads to talk about in the next hour. Oh, we've got economics, politics, the latest Elon Musk drama. Nothing gets more political or more dramatic than kids' parties. And at the end of the show, we're going to hear about the pressure parents face to spend big on their little ones' birthdays. In fact, one survey suggests parents spend an average of £524 on a single child's birthday party. So I want your stories this morning. If you're a parent, what's the most you've spent on your kids' party? Or what's been your priciest party generally, full stop? Do you think kids' parties are becoming a little bit too extravagant? Get in touch. You know the drill. You can text me on 85058. You can send me a WhatsApp message on 08085 909 693. And if you're on social media like X or Blue Sky, just use the hashtag WakeUpToMoney. Now, I'm in a weird position this morning where I have two of my guests in the studio, which means they just saw that I actually danced to the Wake Up to Money beds, which is embarrassing. I'm joined in the real world by Raphael Ogunrinde, who's the Lancashire-based Chief Executive Officer and founder of Calyx Drinks. Raphael, morning.
Morning. Thanks, Lucy.
And also sitting next to me, IRL, is Tom Pugh, the UK economist at the audit, tax and consulting firm RSM. Morning, Tom.
Morning. Excellent dancing, by the way.
Well, yeah. People can't see it. It doesn't work for radio, but it's pretty good, let me tell you. And joining us, not in the studio, but with us throughout the show, and we're delighted to have her, is Lucy Coutts, Investment Director and Head of JM Finn's York office. Lucy, morning.
Good morning. I'm sorry to have missed the dancing.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're kind of missing the in-person party and the dancing. Lucy, any pricey parties in your neck of the woods?
No, I mean, my children are Gen Z, so I've sort of passed that has passed, but I can't remember spending quite so much on either of their parties, to be honest. It must be inflation.
But I think it depends on how many children. When they're younger, you feel like you have to invite the whole class, and that very, very quickly gets pretty expensive. Raphael, I know you mentioned before we came on air, you've got a 13-year-old. Is that a cheaper party or a pricier party?
A difficult one, really, because I mean, the bouncer council now is averagely priced at about £80-100 thereabout. So yeah, it is expensive. Cost of living is not helping. Mm. Some people say £300, some people say £500 is too expensive.
I mean, it's got to depend on who you ask, doesn't it? Because I think a lot of people don't have the budget. They don't have the stretch in their budget to spend that much. So we will dig into this anyway later on before 6 o'clock with somebody who specializes in planning parties for kids. But do get in touch. Let me know what you think. Raphael, delighted to have you back on Wake Up to Money this morning.
Thank you.
How's business been over the last year? Because a challenging year for lots of businesses, but I see that you're looking to recruit, you're looking to scale up. What's going on?
There's a lot going on in the drinks industry, a lot of growth, but challenges come with growth. For us, it's been exciting. We've had our massive dips, and now things are looking really, really good on the bright side. A lot of collaborations happening, a lot of interesting things. So much going on in the positive side of things.
That's really good. So I'm glad that there's positive things. I will ask you, though, about the challenges. What has been the difficulties for you over the last few months?
A lot of it has been around people, finding the right skill set to be able to fit into some of the key positions. We'll just say funding, as we always experience in business. It's been quite challenging as well. But people are wanting good, healthy stuff, which is what we specialize in. Natural, healthy products that add value to people. So that's been more of the things that we've been able to be able to assist with in the industry.
Great stuff. Well, let's dig straight back into the week that was and see what the business landscape has been like in the last few days. No easy answers or false hope. That was the message from the Prime Minister at the Labour Party conference. So Keir Starmer promised to build a Britain that was built to last. And like Rachel Reeves on Monday, he tried striking a bit more of an optimistic tone in his first party conference speech as Prime Minister this week. In the last few weeks, he's described the government's first budget next month as painful, but he's been keen to stress the burden's going to be shared.
If we take tough, long-term decisions now, if we stick to the driving purpose behind everything we do, higher economic growth, so living standards rise in every community, more opportunities for your children, clean British energy powering your home, then that light at the end of this tunnel, that Britain that belongs to you, we get there much more quickly.
Right. Raphael, I mean, just a week ago, we had some figures out that showed that consumers were feeling really, really gloomy. They'd heard all this kind of pain to come messaging from the government, and they were really a big drop off in confidence. Now we're getting this messaging that there is light at the end of the tunnel. How important is it to hear that from the Prime Minister for a business like yours?
I think it's something we've heard before. The last government said something similar. But here we are again, everybody having to put in and dip into these challenges that we have as an economy. From a business point of view, we want more money in the economy. We want people to be able to spend more. But that's something that we're still not seeing happening very much.
Tom, the more optimistic messaging from the Chancellor and the Prime Minister in the last couple of days, what do you think is behind that? Do you think they're sort of anxious that they might have over-egged the pain-to-come pudding and now they need to kind of give us some optimism?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think all we've heard for the last 6 weeks or so is painful budget, spending challenges, it's going to be difficult, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And like you said, we see that now, that really sharp drop off in consumer confidence in September. We saw it in another survey that came out this week, a big drop in their measure of consumer and business confidence. So I think they've taken the message that actually they've probably over-egged that half. And the pain now, what we've missed is the kind of where we're going. So this pain now, but it's going to be sunny, uplit lands in the future, and this is where we're going to get to. We've not heard much of that bit yet, and I think that's what they're starting to pivot to, and that's what we're looking for.
So it's not just talking about the pain of the journey, but the destination.
Yeah,
at the
because
end of it.
The pain's got to be worth something. If all you talk about is the pain now, and there's no, well, what's the payoff? It's fine. We can all save now and pay a bit more now, but we've got to know what the benefit to that is going to be in the future.
Lucy, do you think it's a bit more jam tomorrow?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, she's certainly been very measured in her approach. And, we've all got to wait for the 30th of October. And we've all got the message. But, as Tom said, we sort of need a little bit of the good news as well. And I'm sure, well, I'm very hopeful, I'm ever the optimist, that there will be a rabbit out of the hat.
I mean, they always feel like they need to have a rabbit out of the hat, don't they, Tom?
Yeah, always. There's always something. And I kind of getting the feeling that maybe the budget bark is going to be a little bit worse than its bite when it actually comes down to it.
And one of the things actually that might change some of the numbers on the budget is one of the front pages this morning, the Times has got Reeves set to profit by tweaking debt rules. That's the front page of the Times. Now, economists have quite often in the past criticised the current government borrowing rules as preventing investment. This says it could free as much as 50 billion quid.
Yeah, I think the first thing is the current fiscal rules are a bit weird in that they really incentivize you that if you need to save money, the easiest thing to do is to cut investment. And we've been doing that for the last 20 years. And that's one of the reasons why we routinely have the lowest investment in the G7. It's why we're now facing crumbling hospitals and schools and railways, et cetera, et cetera. So I think changing those fiscal rules to incentivize investment is a really, really smart choice to do. And there are a dozen different ways you can do this, and each one gets you 5, 10, 50 billion pounds. So depending on which, exactly which one she chooses. But I think the point of shifting the rules to incentivise investment rather than disincentivise investment is the really key point.
Yes, so what's being reported is a change that would allow the Treasury to rethink the way it measures debt, so government could offset assets such as money owed from student loans against the national debt. And then the funds can be spent on big ticket items, you say, in infrastructure, not on that kind of day-to-day spending, so not just to sort of, cover the cost of paying pensions, that kind of thing. Lucy, more cheery news than we've perhaps seen. We're not hearing, though, that we're not going to see tax rises.
No, I mean, she has promised, and I think she sort of reiterated it, that she's not going to be taxing working people. So, where is she going to hunt? And if she wants growth, then, it's unlikely to be towards corporates. So it looks as though it's going to be the sort of the more wealthy individuals who have assets. So probably the tax rates of capital gains tax, inheritance tax, and maybe pension contributions. And also there is some talk about the relief on business property. And these are all sort of things where people hold assets and then they're taxed on them later on. So we shall see whether those rates are lifted.
There's another potential story, Lucy, making the front pages this morning. BBC Business page has Treasury reconsidering Labour plan for nom-dom tax status. The FT has got Reeves ready to tone down tax raid on rich nom-doms. This is the story that the Treasury is reconsidering parts of what was in Labour's manifesto plan to toughen up the abolition of non-domicile tax status. There are concerns over how much money could actually be raised if wealthy foreigners simply left the UK. Do you think that once you're in government, looking, you're staring down the barrel of the hard numbers and facts, it can sometimes be a bit trickier?
Yeah, I think it is. And the thing is that the very wealthy tend to contribute most in terms of tax revenue. So by scaring them off and perhaps that seeing them relocate, and I think there is evidence of that over the last 3 months, you know, you're actually taking away a huge amount of tax revenue. So I think it's finding the right balance, but equally, you know, she is a politician and she will have to sort of satisfy the political side as well and her supporters. So it's a fine balancing act.
Right. Let's talk about Shein, because earlier this week on Wake Up to Money, the chief executive of the clothing label Superdry accused the Chinese fast fashion business Shein of exploiting tax loopholes and being, I mean, they didn't mince their words, an environmental disaster. He also said it shouldn't be listing on the London Stock Exchange.
This exposes a real problem with society and government, because what we are doing is allowing a company to ship in goods into this country without paying, I think, no VAT, no import duty, and shipping single parcels from China. So a complete environmental disaster. We're allowing somebody to come in and be a tax avoider, essentially. We're potentially going to promote them on the London Stock Exchange when they're undermining a net zero position.
Well, we also got talking to Sir Ian Cheshire, who was previously chief executive of the B&Q owner Kingfisher and chairman of Barclays Bank UK. He told us why he thought it would be a good thing for Shein to list in London.
London Stock Exchange's got a very good set of controls and quality requirements. You can't just show up and be accepted with open arms. There are lots of difficult decisions and nuances when you assess companies for their environmental impact. You take oil and gas, you look at mining companies. There are all sorts of pros and cons. I would always vote for companies coming to London to be on the responsible side of a transition and moving in the right direction. And I'd rather have them in London where we can influence them and make them more leaders in their space than go to another stock exchange, which might just let them do what they want.
Well, Shein declined to comment. It directed us to previous statements in which it said Shein's success is down to a flexible and efficient supply chain, not tax exemptions, and that they look forward to working with policymakers to review current frameworks. Well, there you go. Lucy, could listing on the London Stock Exchange improve transparency when it comes to Shein's tax practices, to its environmental impact?
Yes, I think listening to both both those comments, I think I'm more in the camp of Ian Cheshire, that I feel very secure that the framework at the London Stock Exchange is very definitive and it's it's very highly regulated. So I think you would probably sort of see that Shein's perceived imperfections, if I dare say, that those will be improved. And so it may be a force for good ultimately. And the London Stock Exchange is sort of obviously keen to attract new incumbents.
Yes, I mean, we spend a lot of time, don't we, sort of criticising it because people are leaving. And now when somebody's looking at signing up, then we've got all these concerns as well. I mean, Tom, how could the government address the environmental concerns that are associated with fast fashion without harming the economy?
Yeah, so I think, as we said, London
Stock Exchange,
London Stock Exchange has been pretty unloved, and we've all been complaining about that for the last 10, 20 years or so. So I think there is a case for attracting more firms onto the London stock market. And quite clearly, there are rigorous controls there. So it's not like anyone can just rock up. So as long as you meet those requirements, I don't see it really as a problem. And in terms of the environmental and the tax things, if there are issues there, then that's clearly something for government to deal with. and all the associated trade-offs. Maybe it is just too difficult and too time-consuming, and it's not worth taxing these small parcels. But actually, well, maybe that was the case when these rules were implemented 10 or 20 years ago, and now technology has progressed to the point where actually you can do this kind of thing. So perhaps these rules do need updating, and in terms of that, in terms, maybe there is a justification for some sort of environmental tax or a plastic tax or something like that. But I think this is a question for government to look at, to weigh those trade-off and balances. I don't think you can expect individual firms to kind of look at this kind of thing. It really is a matter of policy, and perhaps this is something the new government will take a look at.
How easy is it for a government to address a concern like this when you've got global supply chains? It's, you know, it can be very difficult even for the company itself to know exactly where the supply chain is, has come from.
Yeah, it can be very, very difficult, and it takes a lot of work to really go through every step of those supply chains and make sure that everything is okay. But it's kind of work that really needs to be done if you want to be sure of your product, to be sure that you are environmentally sound, that your workers' rights are being protected, all of that kind of stuff. So it is a lot of work, but it is crucial work, and it's crucial work that needs to be done, and something that I don't think we should shy away from too much.
Okay, that was a big, difficult question. Let's ask a really simple one. Like, how do you grow the UK economy? There is some good news this week. There has been good news for the UK economy. The OECD has upgraded its growth forecast for this year. It's predicting the UK will now have the joint second highest economic growth among wealthy nations. The UK is now expected to grow by 1.1%, which puts it about level with Canada and France. It's really interesting, isn't it? This is going to be music to the ears of the new government, which has put growth absolutely at the centre of what it wants to achieve. Raphael, are you likely to increase your investment plans at the moment? You know, has an improved outlook made you feel upbeat?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good thing. Growth is lovely. I agree with what Tom is saying there about how technology has changed a lot of things, and this kind of forecast that we've heard right now is good for our business, is good for the economy. Attracting foreign businesses into the UK is exactly what the government needs, exactly what we all need, to create jobs, to allow more money circulation. So if money is able to come into the country and help us grow as businesses, as individuals, it's win-win for everybody. So it's a good thing.
Absolutely. More people can afford to buy drinks.
Exactly. There you go.
Do you have a wish list for the budget? Is there stuff you'd like to see on there that would help you make investment and grow as a company?
Accessibility to funds for businesses. There's a lot of opportunities within the UK. We're attracting foreign businesses coming into the UK to come and from investing in us to working with us and doing a lot of partnerships. So if there's ways whereby the government can allow small businesses like ourselves to access more funds, it means that we can open our doors more to opportunities that will allow us to trade locally and internationally. So yeah. Absolutely. More funds to people.
What are you seeing in terms of your consumers, you know, the people actually buying your end product? Has demand stayed the same? Has it dropped off a bit? Has it grown?
No, it's absolutely grown. So we specialize mainly in natural products. Since the pandemic, there's been a lot of shifts from people consuming products that don't really add value to them to people now wanting products that that enhance their daily lifestyle. So what we've been able to see in our space really is demand for the kind of things that we bring into the space. We come with a lot of product innovation. We come with a lot of products that really don't just fill your belly or dry your thirst, but products that actually give you vitamins and nutrients. So since the pandemic, people are now looking more into what they are consuming, and it's allowing us to basically fit into the shoes of, or rather into the space that has been vacuum for quite a long time.
Tom, what kind of economic indicators are behind this upwards revision in the UK's growth forecast? What's the OECD seeing that we're not?
Well, I mean, I remember the last time I was on with you, I think we were talking about how the outlook for the economy was growing. We were seeing.
So you think the OECD was listening to Wake Up to Money?
I think that's exactly nice. What they were. I think that's exactly right. But really, when we look at it, it starts with inflation, inflation being back at 2% and under control. We've got rising wages. You know, so we've been through this horrible cost of living crisis. Wages are now growing again. They've been growing for a little while. Consumer incomes are kind of now just back above where they were previously. We've got interest rates coming down again. So all of this is meaning that, you know, if you're a household, you're starting to be financially a bit better off. You've got a bit more money to spend. And we're seeing that consumer confidence come through as well. So just households have been saving a lot of money. As consumer confidence rises, maybe they say, well, actually, I'm not so worried about things. I can afford to spend a little bit more of that income. Now, we saw that reverse a little bit in September. So perhaps that's maybe on pause until we see what happens in the budget. But broadly, consumers are becoming better off. They're becoming more confident. That's allowing them to spend more. Consumer spending is 2/3 of the whole economy. So that's a big driver. And then we see the same thing in businesses. Business confidence on all the surveys is back to kind of the same level it was before the Brexit pandemic, before the Brexit referendum. So we're the highest level we have been in, 8 years or so? So again, this is businesses are thinking, okay, we've got the economy starting to grow. We've got a new government. Interest rates are coming down. This is probably a good time to start looking at investing, to start hiring, et cetera, et cetera. We saw the economy grow really strongly in the first half of the year. So all of this kind of thing, I think, is feeding through to this, budding green shoots of an economic recovery that will probably go on for the next 6, 12, 18 months or so.
Lucy, how are investors feeling?
They're feeling pretty optimistic.
Speak for all of them.
speak for all of them. Yeah, fairly optimistic. I mean, the FTSE 250, which is sort of our domestic focused index, where sort of smaller companies, so not the biggest sort of international owners, that is actually outperforming the S&P 500 since June. So I think, you know, businesses are just beginning to see more activity. And, you know, this is coming out of all the things that Tom's sort of spoken about. You know, it isn't just one metric. There's many things that are all sort of falling into place. And yes, we've talked about sort of dampened consumer sentiment around the sort of the messaging really from the government about how bad things are. But that will pass, you know, come the budget and we get a little bit more certainty. So yeah, markets are feeling quite happy.
It's interesting, actually. I was out in Warrington yesterday talking to people about taxes for a different program that I make and asking people sort of what they thought might change. And I was struck by how I think almost everyone I spoke to felt like there was going to be something that would hit them in the budget. And I stopped people who were quite happy to talk about being, you know, top rate taxpayers, and people who were talking about being on benefits and on tight incomes. And literally across the board, everybody had this kind of, what's going to be in it for me, kind of anxiety, which I found very, very interesting. Tom, what does this raised outlook, though, do for in terms of the government's got this goal to be the fastest growing economy in the G7? So if it's neck and neck photo finish with two other economies, it must be feeling pretty upbeat.
I mean, for now,
yes. I think these things change,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, I think the way to think about this is in terms of speed limits. Basically.
Is it? Go on then.
So the way, you know, the speed limit on the UK economy is pretty low at the minute because our population, or our working population, is shrinking, or at least isn't growing very fast. Our productivity levels have been, or productivity growth anyway, has been famously poor over the last 10, 20 years or so. So you know, the speed limit of the economy is pretty low. If you want to get to 2.5% or the fastest kind of growth in the G7, you've got to do something to really raise that speed limit. And that comes back to this investment point that we were talking about before. How do you raise that speed limit? Well, it's investing in all of that infrastructure. It's investing in productivity. It's investing in people so that they can do their jobs better. All of this kind of stuff. Now, this takes money and it takes time. So whilst, yes, we are rising to the top of the pack now, if we want to do that sustainably, we're going to need to see big increases in investment, And we are going to have to be a little bit patient to let that investment bed in over the next, well, 5-10 years.
Thank you. And I do like a handy metaphor, like when you're watching Star Trek and they'll say something scientific and then say it's like blowing up a balloon. And you're like, yes, OK, I kind of get that now. While we're talking about investment, we cannot end the first half of the programme without talking about the big dramatic investment-y story of the week. This is the news that the world's richest person, Elon Musk, has been snubbed from a key government event. He was excluded from the International Investment Summit due to his controversial posts during recent riots. In true Elon Musk fashion, he hit back pretty hard. He made some claims. He claimed the UK is releasing convicted paedophiles while imprisoning people for social media posts. The government, of course, denied this claim, and it says no sex offenders were released. I mean, Lucy, sometimes I will interview a big boss and they will say, we're unhappy with the direction that this government is taking. And I'll be like, oh, that's really strong. Elon Musk just knocks that out of the park in terms of the language that he's prepared to use.
Yeah, I mean, buddy, that is Elon Musk. And, he's regarded by some to be a genius. But with that, I think, comes this sort of rather exuberant language and opinion. It never fails to make one sort of smile. And, I mean, his comments on Taylor Swift were also fairly...
My toes haven't uncurled.
No, that was just wrong on so many levels.
I won't repeat. We're not going to sit here and go through his sort of greatest worst hits. So I won't. But you can, a quick internet search will show you what he said about Taylor Swift. Tom, how significant is Elon Musk's presence or absence or abuse in terms of attracting foreign investment to the UK?
Well, first, as a loyal Swiftie.
It was outrageous. As a fan of cats, I didn't like it either.
Yeah. No, to be honest, I think international investors care far more about the economic fundamentals. So again, all of that stuff that we were just talking about. You look at the UK now and the economy is growing again. Interest rates are coming down. Demand in the economy, so you know, without rising wages, rising consumer spending, all of that stuff says, well, actually the UK economy... is growing, it's going to improve over the next couple of years. Maybe this is a better place to look at investing. We've now got some political stability post the election. When you compare that to some of the political turmoils that's going on in Europe, we've got the election coming up in the US. Well, actually, the UK maybe looks now pretty stable place to be investing over the next 4 or 5 years. I think that's only a positive story.
Tom, thank you very much. Right, that has been our look back at the week that was. Lucy Coutts from JM Finn's York office, stick around, lots more to talk about. Raphael Ogunrinde, you have to stick around till I let you out. You're sort of trapped in the studio with me, but plenty more to talk about in the next half an hour. Tom Pugh, UK economist at RSM, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and you'll be shepherded out of the studio while I say it is just coming up to 5:33.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
So let's get the headlines this morning. Israel is coming under increased diplomatic pressure to reach a ceasefire with Hezbollah. The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, used his first speech at a UN General Assembly to call for an end to the fighting in Lebanon. And Sir Keir Starmer has attended talks with Donald Trump for the first time in New York. Beforehand, he said the aim was to establish a relationship between the two of them. Ukraine's President Zelensky has outlined his plans for victory against Russia in a meeting at the White House with Joe Biden, who's agreed to send more military aid. Mr. Zelensky then met the US Vice President Kamala Harris, who says it's vital to stand up to Vladimir Putin. The Treasury is reconsidering Labour's manifesto plan to tighten the rules on non-dom tax status, which was scrapped by the last Conservative government. BBC News understands there are concerns about how much money it would actually raise. Now, Matty Nixon has the sports.
In football, 10-man Tottenham beat the Azerbaijani side Karabakh 3-0 in their opening game of this season's Europa League. Spurs had defender Radu Dragosin sent off in the opening 10 minutes, but goals from Brennan Johnson, Pap Mates Sarr and Dominic Solanke were enough for victory. Elsewhere, Rangers were 2-0 winners at Malmö in their league stage opener in Sweden. Nedim Bajrami and Ross McCausland got the goals for Philippe Clement's side.
Celtic are the first Scottish side to qualify for the Women's Champions League group stages since it was introduced in the 2020-21 season. A 2-0 win on the night and a 3-0 aggregate victory over the Ukrainian side Vorskla Poltava was enough for Celtic to go through. Manchester City and Arsenal also progressed to the group stage. The Gunners overturned a 1-0 first leg deficit to beat the Swedish side Häcken 4-1 on aggregate, while City picked up a 3-0 victory against Paris FC to win the tie 8-0 over two legs. In cricket, the pace bowler Josh Hull has been ruled out of England's tour of Pakistan next month with a quad injury. England have opted not to call up a replacement. England's white ball side face Australia in the fourth one-day international at Lord's later on Friday. And the RB Formula One team has confirmed that they're dropping Australian driver Daniel Ricciardo for the final six races of the season. He'll be replaced by the New Zealander Liam Lawson. Ricciardo's future had been in doubt for much of the season, and if this is to be his exit from F1, he bows out with 8 Grand Prix wins and having made the podium 32 times.
And it's dark and damp here in Salford, but let's get the weather where you are with Louise Lear.
Good morning. After a wet night, we've still got some rain to clear away across East Anglia and South East England first thing this Friday morning. It will do so. By lunchtime, it will be easing away from the Kent coast and skies will brighten. Elsewhere, we'll have sunshine from the word go, a few scattered showers, but a brisk, cool northerly wind will have an impact on the feel of the weather, with highs of 9 to 11 degrees in Scotland and Northern Ireland, 11 to 14 degrees through England and Wales. Chilly start to Saturday. Today leads to plenty of sunshine around, clouding over and turning wet from the west on Sunday. Louise Lear, 5 Live Weather.
On Radio 4, the more you listen, the more you see.
We're living under more tyranny today than our founding fathers did in 1775.
A US presidential election is looming, but underneath, conspiracy culture rears its head once again. And nothing is as it seems.
All those things that we had feared our whole lives was coming true.
Burn the house down and start over. That seems to be the way.
It's America through the looking glass. Join me, Gabriel Gatehouse, as the coming storm continues. Listen on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Wake Up to Money with Felicity Hanna.
Very good morning. If you're just joining us, welcome to Wake Up to Money. Welcome to Friday. Welcome to a conversation about how much kids' parties should cost. Because just before 6 o'clock, we will be struggling with the staggering figure that apparently parents feel under pressure now to spend over £500 on a single child's birthday party. Lots of you getting in touch on this. Sandra says, the bank of Nana and Grandpa help with kids' parties. Cost of venue hire, party entertainer very costly. Cake and food too. Kids always want party bags, which are not cheap. It can easily run up to a few hundred. And Richard says, on birthdays, it's my daughter's 14th this weekend. Bowling, karaoke and fast food. The costs add up, but it's more that keeping up with what a group of teenagers are talking about is impossible. Richard has included some examples such as Slay and Riz. Richard, where have you been? Everyone talks like that. Wake Up to Money is dripping with Riz. Right, let's talk about Thames Water. Two major credit agencies have slashed its credit rating even further. This is following the decision to take away its investment grade status in July. It comes, of course, after Thames Water's statement last week that the company will run, well, essentially out of cash in December, despite previous forecasts giving them until May next year. Now, that leaves the water company, which of course serves 16 million people in the southeast, with a much tighter window to renew its debt. Let's talk to Tim Whittaker, who's research director at Scientific Infra and Real Assets. Tim, morning.
Good morning, Felicity.
Thank you for being with us. I think a lot of Wake Up to Money listeners struggle to understand how a company providing something that everybody needs with customers who are locked into using it can be struggling this much.
Well, basically the easiest way to describe it is they just took on too much debt. They borrowed too much. Interest rates went up. And as a result, they're struggling to refinance and repay all that.
And what were they borrowing for?
They would tell you to invest in the infrastructure itself, but obviously there was a lot of payments made to the shareholders and other investors that they took during the time that they were running up the debt.
So perhaps to sort of fund investment that should have, could have been made over previous years but wasn't?
Yes, correct.
Okay. What would a technical default actually mean? Because no one's going to wake up and turn on their tap and nothing comes out because Thames water went under.
Yeah, so the assets are ring-fenced. So the water will keep flowing and people will still be able to have the shower and so forth like that. But what it will mean is the debt holders will start to have to reorganize and figure out how it is that they'll run the business. And essentially what the government will do is they'll have to step in as a special administrator to step in, run it, make sure that, you know, they can meet all the requirements, make sure that everyone keeps on getting the water and the sewage. But then they will have to fight with all the debt holders in order to make sure that they get the money that they were promised but failed to deliver.
Well, a Thames Water spokesperson said we continue to operate to the undertakings agreed with our regulator in July following the reduction in our Class A debt rating to sub-investment grade. And they said we continue to engage with creditors to consider options for the extension of our liquidity runway and that formal discussions with potential equity investors will commence in the coming weeks. I mean, unpack that for us. What does that mean? It means that they were, you know, everything is continuing as expected and they're looking to borrow more?
Well, basically, they're trying to say that don't panic. We will try and keep talking to the banks and investors. The water will still flow no matter what. But who ends up controlling us in the coming months is going to be another question.
Now, that is an important question, isn't it? Is this a step closer to nationalisation?
I think it's pretty clear that that is the case. If they're going to run out of money by December because they've got to rely on all the banks and other debt investors to waive and let them borrow more money, I think you're going to start to see that people will start to say no, and in the end the government's going to have to step in here.
If the government had to step in, does that simply move the costs, you know, all of the additional costs of this company onto the taxpayer?
That's a great unknown. If they step in and able to work it out and then basically, privatise the asset again, then hopefully they won't see too much of the costs. It would be a bit like when the electricity retailers sort of collapse, but everyone else has to pay a levy. So hopefully that's not the case, but it's never been done before, so we'll have to learn by doing, I guess.
So what sort of timeline are we on now? It feels like there's always a deadline looming. When's the next date we should be watching for?
I think you have to watch for December to see whether or not Thames can actually borrow more money. I don't believe that they will be able to because they've suddenly run up more bills than they expected when they said, oh, we can operate until May, no problems. Suddenly it's now December. If you start blindsiding investors like that, it's going to be very hard to convince them to lend you more money. And so I think by December you're going to start to see the government has to step in here.
What about water companies more generally? I mean, Thames Water obviously is perhaps the best known for struggling, but are these investable companies more widely at the moment?
At the moment, no one's really touching them. I've seen the large infrastructure investors, so these are the big sovereign wealth funds around the world, they do not want to touch any of these sort of regulated utilities at the moment. There's too much uncertainty. You see Southern Water has had to do a lot of equity injections because it's in a similar state as Thames in that it's not meeting its performance requirements and it's heavily geared as well. So there's a lot of trepidation around all these different assets and whether or not they are fit for purpose or fit for investment nowadays.
Tim Whittaker, Research Director at Scientific Infra and Real Assets, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The trouble is, Thames Water is such a serious story. You can't make jokes about liquidity at a water company because it is too important. We will be sticking with this as we get news on it over the coming weeks and months. Now, still with me throughout the rest of the show is my two whole programme guests. I've got Lucy Coutts, Investment Director and Head of JM Finn's York office. And I've also got Raphael Ogunrinde, who's the Lancashire-based Chief Executive Officer and founder of Calyx Drinks, in the studio with me, which I'm, you know, a bit giddy with because we don't often get that post-COVID. Raphael, tell me a bit about your business because you're going through a funding round at the moment. What kind of stuff is in your intray?
A lot. There's a lot of collaborations going. You know, we specialise in natural products. We specialise in in offering people things that add value to them. But post the pandemic, we diversified a little bit. We started having loads of calls from people ringing us up, say, "Hey, who makes your drinks for you?" And we're like, "We make it ourselves." And they go like, "Really? Can you help us out?" And we're like, "Yeah, sure. What do you want?" And before we knew it, 2021, 2022, 2023, we started a lot of contract packing, which is now over 75% of what we do as a business, helping other people to actually pack their own products into cans, bottles, and pouches. And due to our experience in food science and technology, we've been able to create a very unique process of craft brewing soft drinks. And that's now allowed us to start developing products for a variety of other brands. So we've got really interesting collaborations with the likes of Sabil's Date Water, the one and only kind in the whole world, the likes of KT, unique brand, Lincoln and York, Zenith, a new brand. So a variety of really interesting new products that we've been able to assist to come into the market. Mushroom is a big thing now with the likes of Blooming, which we were doing a lot of work with, the likes of CBD One, a variety of brands out there that we've been able to collaborate with. And this for us has created a kind of environment where we now need, investments to scale up, because these brands, including our own brand, which is still out there in the market doing extremely well, people are wanted, people need it. We are able to work with all these variety of brands to export products out of the UK, into the Middle East, into the US, into major retailers in the UK. So yeah, it's a lot going on in a very interesting way. And being able to scale up our productivity to over 50% right now is what we're trying to achieve. And if we're able to get some form of support towards that, it means more job to be created. It means helping out a lot within the society. We're trying to work with charity organizations, which is something we've always been doing right from day one, to help those in need. We have people that have some form of disability working within the company. So there's a lot going on, and in a very, very exciting way. I try to keep calm, but deep in my head, like some of my colleagues, like Jenny would say, my head pops like a popcorn sometimes. I try to keep it calm as much as I can.
I mean, that is a lot going on for a company with only, I think, 7 staff.
Yeah, absolutely. Mixed with full-time and part-time. But right now we need more people, and we cannot fund that the way we are. So we're trying to, we're working on an investment round where we're trying to get more cash into the business to help us expand. We've, due to the diversification of how we do things and what we're doing as well, we've been able to create another section / another company, basically, which we're going to invest this money into, where we will be able to really help a lot of people. In fact, I do these Instagram videos. I've not done some for some time now because I've been so busy with a lot. But we had this interesting call from a lady that apparently watched one of our videos last year and inspired her to start her own business. And now she's doing really well in retail. And she went to an event somewhere in Birmingham, and she met another lady, Matcha Yard, another fantastic brand that we've worked with. And she was like, so I'm looking for somebody that can help us make our stuff. Do you know anybody? And she goes like, have you spoken to Raphael? Oh, that was the guy that inspired me to start. I was like, okay, here's his number, give him a ring. And we had this call and we spoke for like an hour. And I was like, oh, I didn't even really know that these videos go as far as they go. But yeah, for us right now, it's expansion, it's growth, is adding more to the economy, adding more. I mean, cost of living is on the high side now. And what we're trying to do with this, all this collaboration with all these amazing brands is create an environment where everybody can work together to be able to reduce costs, so that what everybody's offering consumers in a healthy, natural way. Because the challenge has been within the UK, especially, that when you want to offer people healthy, natural products, there's a massive price tag to it. And one of the things we've been trying to work on is how do we bring products that add value to people at a reasonable price, so that everybody can literally afford it and stay healthy, especially with the kids. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that's quite interesting that kids consume. Or how can you provide kids with products that, including adults especially, but how do you provide people with products that, you know, don't have high quantity of preservatives in there, products that have vitamins and nutrients in there, the most natural way, and that's the space that we're filling.
It's fascinating to hear, you know, how it's growing. And it shows something about consumer demand, doesn't it? That sort of move away potentially from just the kind of traditional fizzy pop and into drinks that you feel are actually doing you some sort of good. Thank you very much for talking us through that. Lucy Coutts, let's talk about a completely different sector, a completely different company, OpenAI. So the company behind ChatGPT. Reportedly pushing ahead with plans to become a for-profit company. We've seen significant senior figures leaving the company as this news unfolded. Most recently, its chief technology officer, Mira Murati. It's seeking $6.5 billion of new funding. It's declined to comment on the details of no longer being controlled by its non-profit board. But is this a surprise to you?
No, not really. I think, you know, it all started to sort of become a little bit more uncertain when Sam Altman was ousted sort of last, about 12 months ago now. And then sort of since then, there are only two of the original 11 founders in place. And it is backed by Microsoft, who invested, I think, about $10 billion. But at the current valuation, it's worth about $150. But it is loss-making. So it's losing about $1.4 billion a year. So I think, you know, someone's looked at the business and sort of said, look, actually, we need OpenAI, but actually it does need to generate profits. So I think it's moving. It's going to take on a different guise. But I think it was inevitable, to be honest.
It is strange, isn't it, to talk about a company being worth hundreds of billions of dollars and still making a loss. Raphael, do you use AI at all in your business yet?
It's we do a tiny bit, but it's the next phase of what we're moving into now with this expansion that's about to happen. AI has been fantastic. I mean, Tom said a little bit there about how AI has impacted the economy, and right now most businesses are having to you just got to adapt. I mean, what's happened with Shein? You've got to adapt to it and open your business to it and find the positives to it, because there's a lot of negatives with AI as well. But we're trying to focus on the positives and how to use it for good within the business. And, you know, in the food industry, there's a lot around traceability. Raw materials, packaging come from the UK, obviously, but all over the world. And being able to track things way back to the source of where it's come from is very, very important. And one of the most straightforward ways to do that these days is use of AI. So yeah, we're looking into that really, really good. I mean, there's some work that we're trying to do with the Manchester Growth Company to be able to assist us with expansion into that.
It's always fascinating asking a small and medium company boss what they're doing with AI, because the answers are always completely different. And supply chain tracking, that is a new one on me. Fascinating. Lucy, there's a bit of a story of black and gold on the commodity markets at the moment. So you've got oil slumped 3% yesterday, compounding the 3% hit it had already taken this year. On the other hand, gold hit a new record. Its rise this year is now about 30%. Let's start with oil. What caused yesterday's drop?
Well, Saudi Arabia is considering lifting the output of oil. So what it tends to do in order to, I use the word control carefully, but in order to keep the price of oil high, then you cut production. And what they're doing is they're going to produce more. So, and that's to compete really with seeing more supply from the likes of the US. And it's in an environment where there's been weak demand from China, but I think that's all sort of going to change. So it's all about sort of managing the price of oil, and it's about supply and demand ultimately. So it has softened.
And then gold's strength just continues. What's driving that?
Well, it's a tail risk sort of hedge. You know, it's a diversifier, it's a store of value. But what really happens is that when interest rates fall, the price of gold tends to rise. And this is sort of being played out bit by bit. And really, you know, it's hard in today's sort of geopolitical environment, and actually where we're seeing sort of moderate economic growth. Yeah, it's difficult to find a scenario where sort of precious metals, you know, silver, gold, platinum et al., won't do well just because they're a haven.
Lucy, thank you. Right, I've been asking this morning whether we spend too much on children's birthday parties, how much you spend on children's birthday parties. Beth says, this may be rose-tinted spectacles from a child of the 80s, but an extravagant birthday party was the McDonald's treat. Silly hats, balloons and a Happy Meal was more than enough. McDonald's was a very occasional treat, not a regular occurrence. I feel sad for today's generation and the desire for more, more, more. Beth, thank you for that. Let's talk about that more, because a lot of parents clearly do feel that pressure. A new survey carried out by Oxygen suggests the average birthday party costs, are you ready for this, an incredible £524. So what is behind that trend? And what was wrong with a burger and a silly hat and maybe a newspaper wrapped past the parcel? Let's talk to Jane Darling, who's the owner of Absolutely Amazing Parties, which is a family-run children's entertainment company. Jane, good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, absolute shout out for your company title. I believe in bigging your business up and absolutely amazing parties. I bet you were pleased when you came up with that one.
Yes. it's a lot to live up to, though.
Very true. Okay, so this figure, I mean, I've got three kids who are still at birthday party age, and I have seen that if you want to take everyone to, I don't know, Soft Play, or you want to get in one of these companies that puts up, you know, tents and things in your sitting room for them to have a sleepover in, it can cost a few hundred, but well over £500. Is that really going on?
Absolutely. I mean, that doesn't take much to tot up. Once you've hired a venue, hired entertainment or a bouncy castle, and your food, party bags, balloons, easily. I'm surprised it's not more, to be honest.
So are you seeing parents spending more?
Oh, absolutely. There's been a clear trend over the past couple of years for parents to be spending more money on birthday parties, more money on entertainment and things like new trends, which have been things like balloon arches. So, yeah, I'm not surprised at all by this figure.
Moira on X says she has a fond memory of parents asking us, who is the entertainer? And me replying, I am. Cue looks of shock and mutterings of horror. Are parents expected now to come up with a proper entertainer? And is that a clown, a magician, or something more modern?
It's anything really. I mean, magicians are still super popular. It's not something that we offer, but I know a lot of magicians really popular. And the kind of entertainment that we do, which is more character based entertainment. But I would have to say, as a parent, doing your own entertainment at a party is very, very difficult. You know, you've got to entertain the adults, you've got to keep them supplied with Prosecco or coffee or whatever their drink of taste is, and you want to leave the kind of the entertainment to somebody else for a couple of hours.
There are definitely two kinds of parents at children's parties, aren't there? There are the Prosecco parents and there are the here is your squash, it's the same as the kids' parents. What kind of character-based bookings then? Like, what's your most popular kind of service?
Our character-based bookings are based on kind of fairy tales, so things that you would see at Disneyland. So by far, the Snow Queen and superheroes, that makes up the crux of what we do every weekend. And we're running probably between 16 and 20 parties every weekend across Nottingham and the surrounding areas.
So that is huge demand. This is, you know, there's a lot of parents who are just outsourcing the whole event.
Oh, it is a huge demand. I mean, we started 11 years ago, and this concept was fairly new. But now there's lots of companies doing what we do across the country that are all thriving and making a good living at doing this.
Now, I hate going to a party and coming away with a small plastic bag filled with small plastic stuff that is lost in my car on the way home. Is the party bag still a big part of this?
The party bag is still a big part of it, but it is changing. It's evolving. So we tend to encourage people now to choose more environmentally friendly options. So things like sweetie bags, a book or a colouring book, things that are useful rather than the traditional bags full of plastic little bits that you say get lost or thrown away or just go to landfill.
Paul says, I've got a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old. We live in a reasonably well-off area in South Wales. No one I know has ever spent 500 plus quid on a birthday party, and we've never been to one like that. What world do these people live in? Are your customers, I'm going to use the words, ordinary people, or are they, you know, are they quite wealthy people?
No, our customers are across the board, absolutely across the board. And once you look at the figures, it isn't that difficult to tot up to £500. Not once you've spent money on food. I mean, if you take your kids to a cinema or a trampoline park, you know, you're having to pay per head. So, personally, I don't think it's as shocking as, but maybe because I'm in it, I don't know.
like the wedding industry. Jane, fantastic to talk to you. And I'm glad there's someone out there taking the weight off parents' shoulders.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jane Darling there from Absolutely Amazing Parties. Thank you to Jane. Thank you to Raphael Ogunrinde from Calyx Drinks. Thank you to Lucy Coutts from JM Finn. Thank you to you for being with us and for all your messages this morning. That's it for Wake Up to Money. And now it's time for Five Live Breakfast with, I think, Chris and Claire. Morning.
You got it absolutely right. Good morning, and good morning to you as well. Coming up on Five Live Breakfast, we're about to speak to someone who's trying to get out of Lebanon.
Also, the Prime Minister has been meeting Donald Trump in New York.
And there's a new report into how many gambling ads football fans are being exposed to. Spoiler alert, it's a lot.
The voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Breakfast.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Five Live Breakfast. Chris and Claire with you today. Here are the news headlines at 6 o'clock. Pressure is growing on the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to agree to a ceasefire deal with the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah. Sir Keir Starmer has used his first speech to the UN General Assembly as Prime Minister to call for an immediate pause in the fighting. The Prime Minister warned of a wider war if hostilities were allowed to continue.
I call on Israel and Hezbollah, stop the violence. Step back from the brink. We need to see an immediate ceasefire to provide space for a diplomatic settlement. Because further escalation serves no one. It offers nothing but more suffering for innocent people on all sides.
Mr. Netanyahu will address the Assembly later today.
The Prime Minister has had dinner with Donald Trump in New York. Sir Keir Starmer visited Trump Tower last night after his address to the UN. The PM, who was joined at the meeting by the Foreign Secretary David Lammy, is now flying back to the UK. Sir Keir had hoped to meet the Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris, but couldn't due to diary challenges.
A man has been arrested in connection with what's been described as an act of cyber vandalism at most of the biggest railway stations in England and Scotland. British Transport Police say the man works for Global Reach Technology, which provides Wi-Fi services for Network Rail. Passengers trying to access the Wi-Fi were diverted to a page that police say displayed Islamophobic messaging.
A study has found the number of gambling adverts such as pitch side hoardings and shirt logos during the opening weekend of this season's Premier League were almost treble last year's figures. Researchers from the University of Bristol counted more than 29,000 gambling messages. The government said it's committed to strengthening protections for those at risk.
And a year to the day since the Sycamore Gap tree in Northumberland was felled, the National Trust is offering communities across the UK the chance to request 49 of its saplings.